Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Stephanie Lecce. Earlier this week, Governor Scott Walker called for a meeting with the leaders of Wisconsin's 11 Indian tribes to discuss plans for a Menominee casino in Kenosha. The plan, which also includes a partnership with Hard Rock International, is strongly opposed by the Potawatomi tribe. It says the project would take away business from its Milwaukee casino. For UW-Madison professor Patty Lowe, the casino debate is just one of the modern challenges facing Wisconsin's Indian tribes. But as she's documented in her book, Indian Nations of Wisconsin, they have also endured and made great advancements in the last several decades. The book is now in its second edition, and Patty Lowe joins me to talk about the tribe's histories. Patty, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Now, this is the second edition of Indian Nations of Wisconsin. Why did you want to write an updated version?
I had serious regrets almost immediately after the first edition was written because I didn't have a chapter on urban Indians. And more than half of all Native people in Wisconsin live in Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, and other urban areas in Wisconsin. So it was a serious omission on my part, I'm afraid. And then when I originally wrote the book, the first edition, the brother town were sort of awkwardly piggybacked onto the Mohican chapter because there was very little known about them. They were just beginning the federal acknowledgement process. They were terminated back in the 1830s and have been attempting to be a federally recognized tribe ever since then. And it wasn't until the last decade, that effort got some traction. And so now there was material in order to justify a complete chapter on the brother town.
Obviously, each tribe has experienced different things, but have you noticed in the last 13 years certain trends in terms of what the different tribes throughout Wisconsin have been experiencing?
Well, certainly with the Ojibwe, the big challenge has been mining. And back in the mid-1990s, the Mole Lake Ojibwe or Sokoggin Ojibwe and the Forest County Potawatomi and to a lesser extent, the Menominee and Oneida were facing a large sulfide copper mine. And those tribes, in connection with a lot of mainstream environmental groups, were able to meet that challenge. And in fact, the Potawatomi and the Mole Lake actually purchased the mine site in order to prevent that area from becoming a sulfide mine. Currently, the Bad River Ojibwe are facing a massive open pit taconite mine at the headwaters of their Rice River. And so mining especially is something that quite a number of the tribes are very concerned about. The other issue that I think is a common theme is the land into trust issue.
Well, what does that mean, land into trust?
What it means is the Oneida have been buying back land that was originally part of their reservation and putting that land back into trust through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And reservation land is not taxable. And so the land that passed out of their hands because of the Allotment Act in the 19th century, the Oneida lost more than 90% of their land. And so now they've been buying it back and putting it back into trust. Well, that land is coming off municipal tax rolls and increasing the burden, individual tax burden for non-Indians in those municipalities. And the way the Oneida have met it is to negotiate service agreements, you know, paying for roads or paying for police or fire protection or those kinds of municipal services in order to ease the tax burden on individual mainstream taxpayers.
What do both of these issues, both the land into trust and the environmental concerns, tell us about how Indian tribes are organizing and their political agency today in Wisconsin?
Well, certainly the recognition of sovereignty and treaty rights, something that really began in the 1970s and really we're seeing it now. And surrounding municipalities are starting to understand that there is another layer of government between municipal government, state government, U.S. government. Now we're reminded that there are tribal governments as well. And so it tells us that Native communities are beginning to flex some of that political muscle.
We're talking with Patty Lowe about the second edition of her book, Indian Nations of Wisconsin. Patty, you include a new chapter in this edition on urban Indians. Why do they need their own chapter?
I think because the urban experience for Native people is a unique one. It's a pan-Indian environment. You have people from tribes all over the country who are trying to retain their identity as Native people. However, they don't have access to the services that their tribal nations would normally provide for them. Health, education, welfare, all those things that we as citizens, whether you're a Native citizen or a U.S. citizen or a state citizen, enjoy in our lives. And Native people don't have access to that in many cases. And so they've had to create a different kind of social network and social service network in Milwaukee, as an example. But imagine in the 1950s, your family arrives because you've answered an ad basically from the Bureau of Indian Affairs that tells you, come, move to the city. And you see the brochure has beautiful gleaming skyscrapers and happy Native people doing mainstream type jobs. And you've been promised that you'll get job retraining and that your life in the city is going to be wonderful. And instead, basically what you have is a one-way bus ticket to the center of town and directions to a flop house. And now not only are you cut off from your tribal services, but you're cut off from your culture and your language and your ceremonies. And it's been a real struggle for Native people. And, we do see some successes because of organizations like the American Indian Chamber of Commerce and the First American Capital Corporation and some of the other economic engines that we've seen come up, grow in Milwaukee. Indian Summer Festival, more than anything for me, really embodies how far urban Indians have come. And, if I can get just a little personal, my mother, who has lived in Milwaukee most of her life, told me she cried after that first Indian Summer Fest because, for so long she was made to feel like she should be embarrassed and apologized for her Native identity. And here, this celebration of Native culture, for the first time as an urban Indian made her feel proud. And, I think that's not an overstatement. I think a lot of Native people of her generation really, really look at festivals and celebrations, the resurgence of powwows, that really are a great source of pride for them.
For as many successes as the tribes in Wisconsin have had, there still permeates throughout the media stories of where there are struggles when it comes to health care, issues with alcoholism, low employment rates. What is the situation? What is the real situation on the ground for tribes here in Wisconsin? Where are the struggles? Where are the successes? And where are the tribes really making strides toward improving the situation of Natives both on reservation lands and also within our urban communities?
That's such a good question, and it really speaks to the title of the book, Histories of Endurance and Renewal, because there have been successes. I think some of the tribes have experienced some economic success. We're seeing good housing starts. We see tribal programs expanding. There are daycare programs and Head Start programs, there are elder programs, elder housing, Meals on Wheels. There's a really strong sense of land stewardship and a lot of programs involving brownfields, let's say, with St. Croix. They've done a lot of reclamation of brownfields. There are media centers like those at Le Coup d'Orée. The Forest County Potawatomi are almost completely off the grid because of a really very visionary energy program that the tribe has instituted over the past, I'd say, 6 or 7 years. The Menominee, there's this resurgence of their sturgeon ceremonies, and their forest is as healthy as any forest on the planet. But there are those challenges. Diabetes is a huge problem in some of the Native communities. Almost 60% of the population over age 50 is either diabetic or pre-diabetic. I mean, that's an incredible challenge. Child obesity is a major problem. Some tribes have better access to health care than others. That's still a challenge for Native people who live off the reservation and perhaps not in an urban area like Indians in Milwaukee who have access to the Ignace Health Center. So these are some of the vestiges of land loss and really generational trauma, I think, caused by the boarding school experience. Beginning in the late 19th century, you had tens of thousands of Native children who were removed from their homes, placed in government facilities or Christian boarding schools. It was illegal for them to practice their religions or speak their language or maintain any of their culture. And, you know, some of these children, my grandfather, for example, was taken at age 4. And their education really, I think you could argue, was a second-class education. And so, you know, you take these children out of their environment at age 4 and you give them a problematic education, and then they go back into their communities. They don't speak the language. They haven't experienced, you know, what it's like to be a member of a family and be shown love and show love and affection. And now these people grow up and they become parents, and they, you know, that they don't have that good foundation. So that brings with it all the, you know, the drinking and drug problems as people try to just sort of self-medicate and not deal with a fundamental issue like that. So, you know, we're making strides, but we still have these very real problems that we're trying to come to grips with.
What do you see will continue to be issues, and where do you think strength will grow?
Well, I'm an optimist. So the fact that tribes are reasserting their sovereignty and beginning to really act like nations and do what nations do, which is to provide for their people and protect their natural resources, I think we'll see more of that going forward. I think that the gaming operations that provided a first tier of economic infrastructure. Now, some of the tribes are beginning to spin off and create a second tier of economic infrastructure.
You mentioned the gaming industry, and I know that one of the big stories going on right now is the contention between the Potawatomi and their casino here in Milwaukee. And the Menominees plan to build another casino in Kenosha. What do you make of that situation?
Well, I think it was a very deliberate attempt by the state to drive a wedge between the tribes. When you say we'll only allow another casino, but no new net casino, so somebody has to give up a casino and everybody has to agree, well, that wasn't going to happen. And I think everyone knew it wasn't going to happen. And so I think it was kind of a disingenuous path to take. Certainly the Potawatomi are trying to protect their own economic interests in the southeast eastern part of the state, and the Menominee Casino in Kenosha, from the Potawatomi perspective, would be seen as considerable competition. Looking at it from the Menominee perspective, this is a tribe that was improperly terminated in the 1950s, and they are still trying to recover from termination. And it, you know, the Menominee are one of the most economically challenged tribes. So certainly as that tribe moves forward to try to provide as best it can for its people, it's going to be looking at opportunities to do that. And the, you know, the old dog track in Kenosha is a means to an end.
Well, Patty Lowe, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Patty Lowe is the author of Indian Nations of Wisconsin, Histories of Endurance and Renewal, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. She's an enrolled member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe and a professor at UW-Madison. Up next, if a picture is worth a thousand words, how many pictures is a poem worth? We'll untangle the inspiration behind a new exhibit when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.